Hi, this is Alex from Rebel Apple Alternative Cider in Moscow, Russia, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Welcome to episode 216 of Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. We'll be speaking soon with Alex Inova of Rebel Apple, based in Moscow, Russia. Finding out a bit about the apples being used in the cider making there, and more about Rebel Apple and his goals for the future. But first, let's go to a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Hello, everyone out there in Ciderville, around the world. I hope you're doing well. If you are a commercial maker, at least in the U.S., there is a special edition of Cider Chat Live that is now available on all the podcast apps. So if you are subscribed to Cider Chat or the Cider Chat Live feed, you could get that episode, and that was recorded just last week with Michelle McGrath, who's the executive director of the American Cider Association, and it has a number of different legislative goals, you would say, that they are working towards getting for cider makers in the U.S. for relief. And I do feel that this same platform of items could also help other makers in other countries too, moving forward during this time of quarantine. For myself, well, to tell you the truth, I had this whole rap that I was going to tell you. I recorded it. I published the episode. Well, at least had it queued up to go live. And, you know, the truth is, I'm going batshit crazy just like everybody else. Like, what the fuck? And still looking for, like, something to ground me to it all. And often that is what's right in front of us, isn't it? You know, it grounds us all. And my, what's always right in front of me, my connection, is part of my practice that I do, which is Aikido. And that's a Japanese martial art I've been studying for a long time. And I have this cool little book by the founder of Aikido. His name is Morihei Ueshiba. He was an earlier warrior through World War II, I believe. Really highly regarded, of course. I mean, people are like, you know, make up a martial art, they're going to be pretty cool. And he had a divine moment during Masogi practice, which is like a water purification practice, and an epiphany, as all like great teachers have in that way. And writes these little cool things, which was then translated by another Aikikai person by the name of John Stevens. And he made this little pocket guide called The Art of Peace. And so I look into this often to kind of look for things that help ground me. And I found something that helped me actually get myself to turn on the computer today and talk about cider when it's like, well, you know, what's going on out in the world? Even though cider is such a big part of my life and apples. And there's a bit to this quote, but there's just a part of it that really resonated with me out of all of it, that really spoke to me. And I think it's going to be my touchstone. So I'd like to pass it along to you. And that is about self-sacrifice, creating trust in the power of love. And I thought, well, you know, holy cow, you know, sometimes you could just read words for the first time and see them in a way that you never saw before. And maybe this is the first time I'm actually seeing these words, because it resonated with what's going on right now in the world in terms of self-sacrifice, which is giving ourselves up to this moment, which has nothing to do with the economics, has nothing to do with our materialism, the thing to, like, you know, get back out in society. It's not to be a consumer. It's not. It's about to be connected with each other. which then falls into all these other things. Of course, it's commerce and all that in the end. But the beginning is all about love. We self-sacrifice and go into our place right now that we need to do in order to secure safety for all. Because of love. Because of no other reason than that. Because we love each other and we want to have a world that's really interconnected and doing well. And just is busting loose. And this moment of time has given perhaps me the opportunity to see that. And when I think about it, when it all comes down to it, that's all that really matters here. That is it. So that helped me get to this point today with you right now out there in the world. And with that, I'm going to take a little pause and we'll be right back moving on with more from Cider Chat. A big tip of the glass to all the folks out there who are supporters of this here podcast. Thanks to all of you. There's a number of commercial cideries who are part of the Cider Going Up campaign, and that would be the Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. They have been longtime supporters. Also, John Edwards at Process NMR Analysis. If you have any analysis work that you need to do for your cider making, do contact John Edwards. Also, Insider Japan, the only bilingual Japanese and English magazine detailing what's happening in that country and also abroad, and now is also importing into Japan. And also the Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company based in Ross-on-Wye in the UK. Thanks to all of you. There's also a number of cider makers and individuals who are just helping the podcast via their contributions. And that would be Little Pomona, based in the UK, Original Sin in New York, Eden, a specialty cider based in Vermont, James Creek Cider House in North Carolina, Duck Chicken, based in the UK, Elegas Distillery and Cidery in the Netherlands, Westvania Cider in Pennsylvania, that's out in western Pennsylvania, Valley View Farm in my spot of Ciderville here in the Hampshire County of Massachusetts. Let's face it, there's a lot of people out there who continue to donate to this podcast so everyone around the world could get a little sip of cider and what's happening at the best of times and kind of like at the worst of times right now. So thank you so much for your contribution. It really helps keep the podcast on the air. And if you'd like to support this podcast and getting the voice out to the world of what's happening with cider, you could go to the Cider Chat Patreon page, and also you could do a donate at the ciderchat.com website. There's links to both of those there. I have a number of emails that I'd like to share with you because I think it gives us a nice little broad view of what's going on. And this one actually does come in from the Netherlands, and this is from Marcel. So he writes, "First, let me wish you and yours good health and some luck in these desperate times. The virus certainly got a grip on my business since almost all of our herb production is destined for restaurants, hotels, etc. We have been giving away product to elderly homes, people in need. It remains the question if we are able to write out this, but to quote the phrase from your Cider Chat Live podcast, it was, if we have to go bankrupt in order to let other people survive, so be it." Right on. Whew. However, the Netherlands is a great place to live. I am aware to all of that, and it's such a, but it's also a terrible place to go bankrupt. The chances of starting over here are very, very small, so let's try our best not to let that happen. His state of cider, he joined the Peter Mitchell class in January, and it was great. After the first day already, I thought to myself, this was worth it. The course gave me so many handles in the understanding of cider and all things happening. Also great to see the different people in the class, from Korea, Australia, Canada, Ukraine, Greece. Wow. A very nice thing happened. It looks like they were able to do some trips out. And he chose to take the trip that was going to see Tom Oliver. I think we were all very surprised by Tom's totally different approach to cider making. No lab work, no measurements, just the good old taste. Seems that Marcel went home and his head was bursting with plans and ways to make cider. And the decision had to be made. Slow or fast. Real or flavored. Bottle condition or not. Filtered, pasteurized, what to do. And to make it worse, this all had to fit into the kind of customers we aim for. Well, in the meantime, as he's making that decision, they are building their cidery, and he set out some photos, which I will post to, I think I'll post it to the Cider Chat Facebook page. It's looking really great. And it sounds like he has been making some very nice cider. It's with lees in the bottle that tend to float up very easily, so very careful pouring work is required. And he is on the verge of ordering a pasteurizer and filler. So it sounds like you're going to be doing a little bit of what Tom does and then some. And now they just planted some land for 100 trees. They're going to have Dabinet, Kingston Black, and Herefordshire Red Streak. And 10 Yeehaw rootstocks for Peri Pears and Grouse will come from the Orchard Center at Peter Mitchell's. Wow. Also sounds like he was going to get some persimmon, which he did, and it turned out to be 30 kilograms. So how much is that? Yeah, I see that's 66 pounds of persimmons. That's quite a bit. He writes, what a mess to press. They are fermenting away. I'm very curious. And of course, this whole persimmon scene really, I believe, came out from my talk with Laura Everett at SoCal Cider in SoCal, California. That's in the Monterey Bay area, Santa Cruz County, California. And I had a persimmon there that just kind of knocked my socks off. And so now Marcel and a number of makers worldwide are trying their hand at persimmon, which is great. I'm stoked to hear that. Anyways, he ends with, so while everything is on hold over here, I can't help myself to look into the future and see it very bright and tasting. Cider making is fun, in capital letters. Also, in a country where most people don't know what it is. That's the attitude, Marcel. Kind regards and all the best, and for the great podcast work. Badunk. Badunk, back at you, Marcel. And as always, thank you for being a supporter of this here podcast via the Cider Chat Patreon page. You know, the Netherlands holds a very special place in my heart. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about your journey there. All right, another letter coming in from Canada. This is in from Toronto. It's from Duncan Davies. He's a cider maker and an enthusiast and has been enjoying the podcast for years. It's a true joy hearing your podcast evolve. It certainly has, hasn't it, Duncan? Oh, 5 years in the making. He writes, I appreciate all the hard work you put into making this podcast come to life. You exposed me to so many different pockets of the cider world that would otherwise be mostly inaccessible to me. Well, thank you very much. He writes, I just listened to episode 208, Calvados and Apple Brandy Tasting. And that was a recording from Franklin County Cider Days with Ambrosia Borowski, who, along with myself, we were talking or at a seminar talking about Calvados and Apple Brandy and having a magnificent tasting. And he writes that he was reminded about another episode in which you mentioned that you were speaking with a Calvados maker, and if we had any questions, to forward them along. Well, his question is, I was hoping you could talk about the difference between fermenting for Calvados and how that differs from cider fermentation. Well, I do have some info about that, and I actually have a recording that I haven't yet been able to edit, where I was with Etienne Dupont of Domaine Dupont, and we were doing a magnificent Calvados tasting in a shop in Conques in Normandy. And one of the things that kind of blew me out of the water that I hadn't heard anyone talk about, but this is what he said to me on this very question, is he says when they distill the Calvados, they distill it 3 days after fermentation. What? I know, like, okay, I'm in shock too. And I asked him, I said, how could that even be like with the fermentation? Is it that rapid? And he kind of alluded to, yeah, it was that rapid. And that's what he likes to do. I'm going to get to that chat with Etienne, and hopefully it came out good because I just put down the recorder while we were in the shop drinking away, and see how that comes out. It was pretty informative, mainly about tasting Calvados, but that little piece about early fermentation just blew my socks off. I'd never heard anybody say that, and I felt it was kind of like those little pearls that you get out only when you're like in a closed room with the master and you've had a bit of Calvados and secrets get revealed. So that's what I could tell you right now, and I will kind of keep on getting back to that topic. Thank you for writing, and best of luck up there in Toronto with all the Torontonians and Ontarians. Ontario, not Ontarians, I guess. Beautiful region. Love Canada. Oh, Canada, we love you. Alrighty, I have one more letter that I haven't been able to reply to, and so here is my best shot doing it online, on the air, and this is from Todd Parlow. He owns and runs Walden Height Nursery and Orchard, and it is an organic permaculture fruit orchard and propagation nursery in northeastern Vermont, about 45 minutes south of Eden Specialty Cider, and so that is up on the border of Canada. 45 minutes south is not too far from the border, really. They're not licensed for selling hard cider yet, he writes, but for the last couple of years, we've been working with Fable Farm in Barnard, Vermont. I love the folks at Fable Farm, the two brothers there, Christopher and John, and they are a supplier of specialty juice blends. So Fable, I guess, makes two lines exclusively from the Walden Heights Nursery and Orchard. He mentioned that he was listening to a discussion that I was having with Eleanor Leger of Eden Specialty Cider on the podcast, in which I proposed that too many growers and cider makers are running to plant out in a, quote, knee-jerk reaction, European cider varieties. And he forgot who I quoted, but the idea that cider makers should strive to make a good product with what they have instead of feeling insecure if they do not have or cannot grow such varieties. And evidently, this is something that Todd has been preaching for years. Well, here we come full circle again back to Domaine DuPont, because that person that I was quoting was none other than Jerome DuPont of Domaine DuPont in my chat with him, which I will post in the show notes if you want to listen to that. It was a pivotal moment when he was talking, and this is Jerome, about that sense that one must look to what you have already in your landscape. And anyone who took the orcharding workshop at CiderCon 2020 and heard John Bunker talking about that, talking about seedling apples in the U.S., it's that same principle to like use what you have and make good cider out of that instead of always seeking out what grows very, very well in other countries and really creates their own kind of terroir that truthfully we can never, ever copy fully. So yeah, that's cool, Todd, that you saw that. And it looks like they are heading a grant-funded research project to evaluate a wider pool of apple varieties with the emphasis on hard cider production. In 2014, we completed a similar study, but in that case, it was more general. So I have a link to that study here. I'll post it in the show notes for anyone who wants to check it out. Well, alrighty then. And I still haven't even mentioned that the UK Cider Tour is still on for the first week of September. Yeah, that is a cider tour going out September 1st through the 6th. We already have signups for the tour. So if you are feeling like, oh man, are we ever going to get out of this? Well, you know, the future looks bright. We are going to get out of this. Remember, the power of love. If we self-sacrifice now, the power of love will bring us back together. Do check out that England Cider Tour, the info and reservations. There is a very gracious cancellation policy. We're going to be traveling to Somerset and Herefordshire. We're going to be going to the Ross Cider Fest, attending the Cider Club, and visiting Tom Oliver, which you will also hear mentioned in this upcoming chat with Alex from Russia, seeing Martin at Pilton Cider, going to Hex Cider House, hanging out in Bristol, staying at the Green Dragon in Herefordshire. It is a condensed time filled with over like 30 makers because we're going to be at the Ross Cider Fest where you get to go up to like the bar and order cider right out of the barrel. It's so cool. I mean, I just can't tell you how cool that experience is and how awesome the Johnsons are and all the cool people that attend that Cider Fest. It's like the Mecca. If you want to hear a little bit more what it actually feels like in real time, listen to last week's episode with Andy Hallett of Hallett's Cider. And we're also going to be doing sightseeing too. So we'll do some ruins, some castles, and get to see the landscape and orchard walks. It's just an amazing opportunity. I am keeping the faith for it. Now's the time to put out the reservations because I obviously need a certain complement of people. That's the UK Cider Tour. I'll remind you at the end of this episode. But in the meanwhile, now we're going to head to Rebel Apple Cider. This is a cidery up in the making in Moscow, Russia. And I was able to taste my first Russian cider and it was really good. We'll lead with his intro in Russian.
Привет, меня зовут Саша, я из альтернативной сидрерии Rebel Apple, и вы слушаете Cider Chat.
I think of Russia as this huge country that would be booming for apple production because we use a lot of rootstock from Russia for, you know,
like crafting. Antonovka?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the only one I know, but I'm sure there's many more. Is there a lineage for cider making? Like, are people making cider out in the countryside, and is it common or uncommon?
Yes, but it's not a native stuff. I mean, not among elder generations, but for example, my father wouldn't make a cider, any cider. But the reality is that the majority of the producers are located in some villages, because a lot of cider makers produces their cider in their summer houses. So that's one of the points why cider making in Russia is not too legal. I mean, because
actually legal is it like in the US we could legally make homemade cider, you know, non-commercially. Can you do that at home and make alcohol, or is it really strictly regulated by the government?
I mean, till you're small, nobody cares.
Right.
Yeah, and making cider at summer house. Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Government is not really interested in you because the taxes that goes that passes by government are too low, so they don't even care. I mean.
Okay. How did you get into cider making? What was your interest? Is this your father didn't do that? Was there anyone in your family who inspired you?
No, it happened occasionally, and the story is pretty simple and pretty popular. I'm not sure if you know what dacha is. Dacha is a summer house. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Dacha. D-A-C-H-A.
Okay. Dacha. Okay.
Yeah, so usually people have dachas in Moscow, in Russia in general. So I had big harvest of apples at my dacha. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what to do with it. It happened in 2015.
Okay.
I didn't know what to do with that because I like to eat apples, but not as much as to eat a kilo per day. Yeah, so I started to look for some recipes, and to be precise, I was looking to make something stronger than cider. Something like
a spirit, like to distill it?
No, not to distill it, but something like wine or so.
Okay.
Yeah, but I faced with the recipe of cider and just decided why not to do it.
How did you find the recipe for cider? Was that something that was common to find?
I just Googled.
Just Google it, so on the world map of the wide, the web, you found it.
Yes, and there are plenty of articles in Russian.
Okay.
Yeah, so I found it. It was printed in some journal. In some magazine, and I followed the recipe, and I made really shitty stuff. I mean, it became vinegar. Yeah. So,
was that like a wild ferment? You just know
yes,
yeast?
It was wild it was mm-hmm. wild fermentation, and I completely failed with it. Everything became vinegar, and it was impossible to drink. Yeah, but as soon as it happened, I became a bit, angry for the situation, so that pushed me even harder to try mm-hmm. once again. Mm-hmm. And the next attempt was really huge, something like 30 liters, but I managed to make cider. That was cider. Not very good, not balanced well, mm-hmm. Or maybe even completely unbalanced, but that was cider. Well. Since that point, I just fell in love with the drink, with the beverage, and started to push myself, to involve myself in cider making as much as possible. And I suppose as any novice in cider making, I started with two famous books by Claude Gillicoeur and by Andrew Lee, the second one.
Perfect, yeah. The kind of like the Bible for cider makers.
Yes.
And your English is impeccable, so I imagine that you read English equally well. Is that true?
Maybe, but so
you're being modest.
Yeah. Actually, the weakest part of my English is listening. So when the speech is too fast, I just can't catch the words well.
Right. Yeah, that I understand that. Yeah. Is there much in Russian in terms of recipes for cider? You said you Googled that, but I'm wondering if there's any kind of books or, you know, I'm looking for like the history of the Russian, you know, villagers at one time, and maybe that's yet to be found. I have a feeling it's there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like villages?
Yeah, well, at the dacha.
Yeah.
Or, you know, these communities coming together, you obviously have cider-making equipment there.
Yeah.
So that's not hard to find a grinder and a press.
Yeah, not a problem.
Not a problem. So
sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, it depends for what are you looking for.
Yeah.
What are you looking for? If you are looking for some kind of pro equipment, it could be ideal. Okay. For example, I brought mine all from abroad.
Okay.
Yeah, but...
So what are you using for pressing and grinding up your apples?
You mean now or during this
well,
year?
Well, now that you're a commercial maker, right? Is that...
Going to be.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, from what I understand, the government is not so helpful for cider makers to get on board. Is that because like there's kind of like a monopoly in the alcohol scene in Russia?
Talking about this monopoly is much more about spirits and drinks, which is up to 40 ABV.
Right. So vodka, right? We think
something like that.
That's huge.
It would be really hard for you to start making vodka in Russia because that's the point, and the license is about $108,000, which is just license.
Wow.
Yeah, plus all the space should be maintained in a proper way or so.
Right. So you're on the process to be going live with your cidery.
Yeah.
When are you, what is the perfect moment that you hope that that's going to happen for you, that you become commercial?
To start?
Your licensing is all complete.
No, I'm right now I'm in the process of getting this license. To be precise, it's not the license, it's permission. Because
what's the difference?
The difference is for in Russia for cider, beer, mead, and perry, which is poire.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to pay a license fee, like for fruit wine, for example. So this is the simplest category for getting permission.
But who do you get permission from? Is it a certain ministry, a department?
Yes, a kind of it. It's just Russian alcohol beverages regulation department.
So do you, you know, I'm asking these questions, which probably seem really basic to you, but being an American, of course, there's a lot that goes back and forth between Russia and America, and we have an idea of what Russia is, but does this mean you're getting permission, you have to go and meet a certain guy behind a desk and wait for him to say, okay, Alex, you could do this? How does that permission process happen for you? I want to take it out of my Hollywood idea of what that looks like.
I do think that the process is quite similar all around the world.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have to have a proper space for cider making. But to get this permission is not the most important point for to get it. I mean, the most important point is your equipment. And the first thing these guys are interested in is how much alcohol you could produce a year getting this permission. So, what volume of your tanks, for example?
Are you going to be making?
Yeah.
So, when you were doing it, or as you're doing it now, you're starting with like a 5 gallon, like that water jug over there, something like that, right? That's what you probably started with,
okay,
and probably still doing, perhaps. What are you going to be scaling up to? What size containers are you going to be making your cider in?
You mean just containers or just annual production?
Well, you said in order to get that permission, they want to look at how much you're going to make. So how much are you hoping to make per year?
I've checked everything, so I consider that there is no point to start operating commercially since you make about 100,000 liters a year, which is about... which is quite similar to Oliver's.
Oliver. Yeah.
Tom Oliver. Yeah.
So that amount, that's.
It's not too big, but it's not
big enough.
Yeah, but that's big enough. I'm not sure in gallons, but it's probably something like 40,000 gallons.
That's pretty sizable.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So. Where are you in that stage right now? You're getting the permission. How long does it take to secure permission? Are they still waiting for you to get your vessels to put the cider in?
No. Actually, I have constructed everything by the moment. I just have to collect and to prepare all the documents, to prepare all these, passports for the equipment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to collect our, to set our all together, mm-hmm. and to send the request, mm-hmm. and usually it happens in a month. I mean, inspector comes,
okay,
checking everything and decide in, okay. in few days. You usually have the decision, which is usually decline.
Is that pretty straightforward, or is it sometimes you need to know somebody to know somebody to get that permission?
No. You could manage yourself. You could manage on your own, but sometimes it just depends on the point of view of the particular person. I mean, the inspector.
Like the inspector, yeah.
And I don't think it's just Russian thing, and it's not about something like bribes or so.
Yeah.
It's just because. That particular inspector, I expect it to be like that, and as I know, in Russia we have a kind of a government standard what cider is, and under this standard, it's not just pure juice, but concentrate made cider as well.
Okay, yeah.
I do believe that it's the same situation in the U.S.
Yes, it is. You're right.
But nevertheless, you are going to make really high cider, pure juice cider. The inspector looks at the process like under this standard. And if you are going to operate, for example, like Tom Oliver,
right,
inspector, would have a vision at your equipment that you are going to operate, like, you know, Summersby or Strongbow.
Mm-hmm.
So if my process takes half a year, in the point of view of the inspector, it could take just 1 week or 2 weeks.
Right, right. Yeah, they don't quite get it yet, right?
Yeah.
They're still catching up. Because there's not that many commercial Russian makers, is there?
That's true. I do believe that Russian cider market is growing rapidly, and it's obvious. There are a lot of good cider makers in Russia, but the most of them operate quite underground.
Yeah,
it's not like a, you know, it's not like a, you know, dark thing.
No,
it's
not
quite a
tunnels.
Bright thing. But commercial producers, talking about them, I do think, I'm not sure, but I do think it's about 4 or 5, something like that. I mean, we don't count Summersby also. We're talking about just pure juice.
Right. Very good. Very good. And I suspect that's exactly the kind of cider you're going to be producing as a commercial maker.
Pure juice. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Tom a number of times, and I know that you've been over to Herefordshire.
Yeah.
Did you do any type of cider making course or kind of an apprenticeship?
I passed Peter Mitchell's advanced course.
Very good.
And I spent approximately 1 month being in the UK, and I worked at Oliver's as well. I mean, volunteering there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not only there, but we're talking about Tom, so.
Right, yeah, of course. Yeah, there's so much, a wealth of information there. So before we get into your product, what do you do when you're not making cider? How do you sustain yourself? Like, are you, what do you do for work? If I could ask that.
I do think that everything depends on what are you ready for. To establish a cidery, to found a cidery, I just pushed myself really hard into some limits, so I almost sell all the belongings I had. I mean, my the only one property. I just took a loan from the bank, and actually I have a small business, which is small publishing, scientific publishing house.
Okay.
Yeah, and I got a loan from that business, which should be put back.
You're putting it all on the line here, as we would say.
Yes.
You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
You're out, stretched out. Well, that's a pretty big commitment to what you're doing. So, and as such, it means that you also really believe in cider and believe in your skills, too. Tell me about the product that you are hoping to produce, and let's just start there. How are you going to be making your cider?
Actually, it's quite close to my hobby spirit and to those ciders I had been making by the moment I started to create the cidery. There are two of them. One of them, all pure juice. Anyway, one of them is. Just, you know, like beer bottle shaped, which is
small format.
Which is made of different varieties, and mostly it's quite acidic. So there are some, you know, subcategory, something like dry, semi-dry of that particular product, which is called Dicky Crest.
Okay.
Yeah, and I always traveling with a bottle, taking the pictures from different locations I visit.
Oh.
Yeah, by the moment there is quite a big collection of such pictures on my Instagram. The second one is more...
large format bottle?
Yeah.
Okay.
I even have a bottle with me right now.
Oh, good, good.
Looks something like that.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. It says the bride, and there is a woman with like kind of blonde auburn hair. She's holding an apple, and it looks like she's in a casket.
In a coffin,
yes.
It's like, Sleeping Beauty.
Okay, so she bit the apple, and there's a butterfly on it. It says 2017 apple cider, 100% natural. Alcohol is 4.6% by volume. And this is a cork and cage bottle, so a large format bottle. Tell me about this cider.
This cider is the second one I've been making for years, so I'm just keep continuing producing it. This cider usually made of rare varieties.
Rare varieties.
Yeah, I mean, if I get an access to some small amount of apples, it usually goes. So the best things goes for bride.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it oak aged.
Okay, so yeah. In an oak barrel?
No.
You're adding oak to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've never do this, degorging or so, but this year I hope to do at least some limited edition of degorged bright cider.
Mm. Yeah. How exciting. And what about the yeast?
Yeah.
Is the yeast wild yeast here, or you're using a cultured yeast?
It depends on apple varieties. For okay. some varieties, because okay. I tend to ferment varieties separately.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular cider, if we talk about bride cider, mm-hmm. Tends to be wild fermented.
Okay.
Yeah, so I try to make it as natural and as high class cider as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, talking about my main project, which is just wider, this Dicky Crest beer bottles.
Yes, yeah, a small ferment. Yeah,
yeah. It usually fermented with selected yeast,
okay.
with wine yep. yeast. Especially.
All right. Yeah. So you have the two different formats, and then once you go live with your cidery, how do you distribute it? Will you have a tasting room, or can people come and visit?
Yes.
You will have
yeah,
a tasting
yeah.
room. Okay, in Moscow.
Yes, and I do believe, that it's one or just one of few. Moscow located productions. I mean, just Moscow located.
Yeah.
Of course, we have.
How exciting!
We have. So you could reach it just on metro.
Reach it on the metro.
Yeah.
Perfect. So if somebody was flying into Moscow,
yeah.
how long of a trip would it be from the airport to your tasting room via metro?
From airport, if we talk about airport, because in Moscow we are not connected with airport, with metro.
Oh.
Yeah.
You have to take a taxi.
A kind
or,
of.
Or a bus.
Yeah.
Right?
Or Uber.
Or Uber. Okay.
Yeah. So if we talk about airport, I bet it took you, I bet it takes you about an hour and a half.
Okay. And so if you were situated right in Moscow proper, if you're in the city,
yeah,
and let's say you're by the Kremlin,
okay, 40 minutes.
40 minutes,
yeah.
Okay. So Moscow's a pretty big,
yeah.
sprawling city. I've never been there, so I'm just trying to get an idea of
yeah.
How big it is. So 40 minutes to the northwest, where is, in what direction? Like from the Kremlin, just to give people an image.
Talking about Crest, talking, if we...
If that's helpful,
if
I'm
we imagine
sure.
a map... of Moscow, the
yeah.
map of Moscow, it would be on northwest.
Northwest, okay,
yeah.
Very good. So there's a tasting room. Who is your market? Who are you hoping are going to be drinking your cider? When you're making it, you're thinking, obviously you want the whole country drinking your cider,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the goal. But right now, starting off, who are you making that for, and who do you expect to come into your tasting room?
If we talk about tasting room, I'm going to make tours. So anybody who wants to visit it, and because it's quite an unusual thing, it's still unusual thing for Russia. But I do think the, for the US as well, because I met a lot of people who didn't know or who didn't know anything about cider or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to organize tours, not just for residents, but for foreigners, making it a kind of a, you know, attraction.
Yeah. So if they sign up for Airbnb and they could all of a sudden see, oh, and you could do this extra thing, take a tour with Alex. Yeah. Awesome.
Something like that.
And so...
But it's not the the ordinary cidery you ever visited.
I'm sure. Well, what would be unique about it?
Yeah, it's a kind of you know, urban cidery, and it's located in a former military space.
Military space.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even the I do like to call it ghetto cidery. Ghetto cidery. So even the fence around the
it's still
around
there.
The it's covered with razor wire.
Wow.
Yeah. So
put little apples on the razor wire.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I like to keep it this way because it makes the space a kind of unique.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Is there other businesses in that property?
In that property, no.
No. When you say it's at a former military property, I'm thinking a big, huge building. But, you know, because the military here in the U.S., I mean, when they have property, it's like a big, giant, sprawling space. So it's not that big of a building.
No, it's not that big. It's just a former garage. I mean, big garage for big transport.
Okay. Oh, that's going to make it nice for a cidery.
Yes. But I had to create everything there on my own. I mean, the drainage, everything, electricity.
Did you do that physically on your own or hire people?
No, not on my own.
Yeah.
I did. Actually, I did a lot of things on my own with my own hands. But the major part, which is... just should be professionally made, like drainage. Of course, I hired people for that.
Yeah. So you're in this former military building. You have your equipment.
Yeah.
You're waiting for permission.
Yeah.
Now it's a matter of apples. What kind of apples are you using, and or how do you source the apples?
You know, usually I do believe in my... Usually I use just my experience and, you know, just my mouth to bite.
See if it,
to take
if,
a bite.
If it works, yeah, and if it feels right, that apple, you bite into it, yeah.
Usually I just, take a bite, have a smell, and I understand that that apple is going to be the main aroma source for this year's cider. Yeah, so but Antonovka, as you know the variety, as you wrote me,
yes,
is going to be the most popular cider making apple in Russia. It exists, it presents almost in every cider and in bride as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's because of its aromatic compound, and because it's responsible for acidity.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it possible to try some of this cider?
Yes. I could leave a bottle for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to drink some with you now.
Right now?
Yeah. So we could talk about it.
Oh, okay.
What do you think?
Let's do that. Like that. Actually, most of Russian ciders tend to be quite sour because this is the most typical feature of Russian varieties.
Oh.
It's hard to find something bittersweet or so.
How would you say, what would you say in Russian?
We would say на здоровье, but we don't say it right now. I mean, it's a traditional Russian saying when you have a drink,
right.
Like на здоровье. But actually, almost nobody uses it. Just
do you just grab the glass and start drinking?
Usually, people pronounce something which really quick toast. Which is about the the most reason we are doing that, something like for our meeting.
Wow, really fruit forward. The nose is lovely, really lovely. You have nice tannic structure in there. Well done, Alex. I want to say
thank
that
you.
Really well done. So I'm just going to describe this to the listeners. There are the color is like a soft yellow amber. It's a little cloudy, so it's not that perfect clarity. But that doesn't matter to me. I'm just so excited to actually be drinking my first Russian cider ever, and so this moment will be etched in my memory to having that taste from your homeland and what you're doing there to help. Both you and your business, but also for cider in Russia. So I'd like to toast to that and wish everyone there the best, because I think we have a common bond around the world and to the apple and cider.
Thank you.
Well, the aroma, the bouquet, I mean, as soon as you open it, again, this is cork and cage, it just came out, but in the glass, it stops you. It makes you pause with the aroma. And that's very impressive, because oftentimes that could be really missed. So is that the anatovka that I'm getting for your like bouquet? Tell me a little bit more how you would describe this cider.
How would I describe this?
Because then, in the nose, the aroma is really pronounced. And what variety apple would that be? Do you think that's really creating that aroma?
I do think that this aroma... I do think that Antonovka is responsible for this aroma, as well as Pipin Shafranny, which is the second popular Russian variety.
Wow. That's lovely. Really lovely. I'm impressed. And what you have done.
Thank you. Pleasure to hear it.
It shows your study, your dedication, your connection, the people that you have met along the way. You've obviously been picking that up. And if this is where you're at before you open, that makes me feel very, very hopeful, because a lot of times people at a certain stage are not there yet. And I've had many ciders from around the world. And this is, you're cranking it. We might say you're slaying it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. That's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Really exciting. I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was going to be a little bit more funky. It's not funky at all. It's delicate. And the aroma is exquisite. So was this cultured yeast?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So that's why we don't really have the funkiness. You're using kind of like a... you said like a wine yeast or something like that. Yeah. So it's dry and you have some of the tannins. Where are the tannins coming from here?
From varieties.
Yeah.
Surely. In this particular bottle, tannins come from varieties.
Mm. And I love it that it's such a full mouth experience and it's 4.5%. I love that. I don't know if Russians like that, because, I'm not sure. Then some people want to have like a really high alcohol.
Yeah.
But for me, that makes it very accessible, and I could drink a whole bottle. I probably would easily. I mean, I'd drink it, and it'd be delicate. It'd be great with food. Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you.
You got to feel good about that. No wonder you're here at Noclin.
I would add some funkiness to that particular cider.
You could, yeah.
Yeah, and this year I'm going to do it.
That's exciting.
Not too much, but that's just corresponding to my understanding of cider.
Yeah.
Because this particular cider is going to be, you know, an art of mine. The beer style, I mean the beer shaped cider, which is Dickie Crest,
mm-hmm.
is much more famous. Tends to be much more famous, much more spread.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that I don't care about it. It's but this is what I'm where I'm trying to reach my best all the time.
Yeah, you are on the way, and I could see. I love funk and cider. I love, you know, Brettanomyces. I love wild ferment. I love that. This standing alone is absolutely delicious. You could take it in all different directions. That'll be exciting to see what you do there. Yeah, and that's the perfect part now that you're going to be going there. So I asked you earlier, and I don't think I really asked you in a way that you understood. Where are you getting your apples from?
I usually get my apples from different orchards around Moscow. Not especially in Moscow area, but from different regions.
And are those small orchards or...?
Different. I do use donated apples.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe in the philosophy of
mm-hmm.
this, you know, community-made cider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So during the fall, I usually start to collect as many donated apples as
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I get all the apples from different commercial orchards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for some particular amount of some particular variety,
mm-hmm.
and so that's the point.
Are they easy to get apples? Was that hard for you to find sources for apples?
If you are looking for anything, I mean, if you want to mix up all the apples you could get,
mm-hmm.
so there, that's not a problem. You could get as much as you want. But if you get, if you are looking for some particular variety, especially a rare one,
mm-hmm.
That could be a tricky thing.
Hmm. What are you using to press your apples?
I've been using Bracken Claus press.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty small one. I created it all on my own,
mm-hmm.
which is really popular. I mean, almost every second cider maker
mm-hmm.
has created his press on his own. But this one is a pneumatic one, and I do believe it's the first and the only one pneumatic one press inside the making industry in Russia.
Oh.
Yeah. It's much more popular among winemakers,
mm-hmm.
but I did consider it as the best option for me, just keeping it in mind some, you know, approaches I'm going to use. Just want to make really good cider in reasonable volumes,
right?
And watch the quality.
Mm-hmm. That's a good goal.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? A cider maker from Russia, the first one on this here podcast. And I do have another episode coming up with more Russian cider makers, so stay tuned for that. I think the beauty of this is how the apple really connects us worldwide and keeps us in that power of love. So best wishes to Alex as he is in quarantine in Russia right now, working feverishly to get his new cidery open. And I'll be posting the address once that does go live. But in the meanwhile, you could check it out and follow along on Facebook at Rebel Apple Cider. Well, I thank you for joining me on this year episode 216 of Cider Chat. Just so much going on in the world, and it's just really warms my heart to be able to spend this time with you. reaching out to all of you around the world. My hand is in front of me right now, palm facing out, high five virtually to you. Stay safe, stay sane, steady on, and remember, the spirit of self-sacrifice creates trust in the power of love. Let's not lose sight of that or sight of each other. Steady on, steady on. This is Rhea Windcaller saying ciao for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Cider, we like ponds, we love orchards, and having fun, there is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this,
oh yes
there is a reason why we do it like this,
oh yes
there is a reason why we drink it like this,
oh yes there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet,
oh yeah.
We like cider,
ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms,
oh yes we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!